Thank you. So my title of my talk is More Than a Free Meal, Symbiont-Mediated Immunocompetence in the Dampwood Termite, Zootomopsis, and Gusticulus. So I want to start by talking about what am I referring to when I say symbiont-mediated immunity. So what I mean by that is simply an increase in host resistance to a pathogen due to the presence of a symbiont. Now, there are actually a lot of examples of this throughout the animal kingdom, including within humans. And the three invertebrates on the screen there, all of them have bacterial symbionts, which give them resistance to a fungal pathogen. Now, my organism of interest is the dampwood termite. The dampwood termite lives in association with a lot of symbionts. They're actually somewhat famous for their symbiotic associations. They also, because of their eusociality, so they live in groups with very closely related nest mates, so they're always exchanging fluids, they're always within each other's spaces, and they live in very damp spaces, and these things combine to give them high pathogenic pressures. So they face a lot of pressures from pathogens, including from this very effective pathogen, Metarhizium anisopliae. This is a fungal pathogen. It attacks through the cuticle of the termite. Let me move this down. That's better. All right, it attacks through the cuticle of the termite. These things right here, these are the conidia. These are the spores of the pathogen. And this is a very effective pathogen. It's used in some insects as even a control. It attacks many different kinds of insects. However, it's not used commercially to combat termites. And the reason is that termites are very effective at fighting this pathogen off when they are in groups. And if you know anything about termites, they tend to be in groups, all right? So when they are in groups, what they do is they actually groom each other. So they will remove the conidia from the cuticle of their nest mates, and then it passes into the gut. Now, it's somewhat interesting. It's been found in other species of lower termites that when the conidia are in the gut, they actually don't germinate. Now, I say that this is interesting because the gut is within the right pH zone for the germination of the conidia, and the gut is lined with cuticle. Cuticle is a germination cue for the Metarhizium. So why is it not germinating in the gut? Why does it have a reduction in virulence once it passes through the gut? So what's going on in there? Now, there are different possibilities, but the one that I thought was interesting and I wanted to explore is the possibility that perhaps it's the symbionts that live within the gut that are somehow affecting the pathogen and reducing its virility as it passes through. So here's our termite here. This is the gut pulled out. Now back here, this is the hind gut. Within the hind gut, there are a variety of different symbionts. There are a lot of bacterial symbionts. They're not quite as charismatic as the ones that I put up, so I don't have any pictures of the bacterial symbionts. But these are the single-celled flagellated symbionts. These occur in the lower termite species. They're well known for their mutualistic symbiotic interaction. These guys are sort of the textbook example of mutualism. They're known for their cellulose digestion, so they help in the cellulose digestion of the termite. But the question I had is maybe this symbiosis has yet another layer. Maybe in addition to helping with digestion, they also help the termite fight off pathogens, which would be actually a very lovely story if this is a multi-layered symbiosis. So this is the question I have. I'm going to share with you today three experiments that are ongoing that I'm using to help elucidate some of the answers to this question. So do these termite gut symbionts enhance the immunity of their hosts? So the first thing that I did when I was working on this experiment is I needed to figure out a way to get rid of the symbionts but keep the termite alive. So luckily someone else had done this back in the 1930s, a gentleman by the name of Cleveland. So I kind of went off of his papers, modernized them a little bit, and here's the system I came up with. So the termites go into this container here. They undergo high-pressure oxygen. The symbionts are oxygen-sensitive, so this kills the symbionts but doesn't kill the termite. And although I label them defaunate, technically they're only partially defaunated. I get rid of the protozoa and the obligate anaerobes of the bacteria, so those that can't withstand oxygen, they die. My control termites go into this container. It gets pumped up with a bicycle pump to the same pressure for the same amount of time, and then I depressurize them and leave them in there. So this is how all three of my experiments start. So they start by the defaunate and the faunate control. My first experiment is the in vitro antifungal assay. So I take my termites, I pull the gut out, the gut goes into one tube, the gutless body and head goes into another tube, and then I filter them, get the extract, filter out all the bacteria, and then I mix it with my fungal conidia and some ampicillin, and I plate it on some potato dextrose agar. And then I wait for the conidia to grow. Now the hope in this experiment was that I would find that the conidia that are incubated with the fully faunated gut extract have significantly less germination rate, that I get fewer colony-forming units on these plates compared to the defaunated gut. And surprisingly, my preliminary results matched what I was hoping to find. So these are my preliminary results. The control here is, it's got everything that these have except the termite extract. Instead, it has sterile water. And what I found is that this is pretty significant, that the faunated guts significantly reduce the number of colony-forming units compared to the defaunated guts. They're also significantly lower than the head and body, which aren't very different from each other. And also, I thought somewhat interesting is that all four of these, anything with a termite extract, was significantly reduced from the control. So termite extract alone, no matter what part of the termite, was reducing my colony-forming units. So the next experiment, somewhat more challenging, is what happens if I do this with the whole organism? What happens if I use a whole living termite, I defaunate it, and then I treat half of them with a conidia suspension in Tween 80 solution, and then the other half with a Tween 80. So those are my two groups. I treated them, and then I tracked their survivorship. And these are the preliminary results from that. So the ones in blue are the faunate. The ones in red are the defaunate. The solid lines got the Tween 80 control solution, and then the dotted lines got a 10 to the 5th conidia suspension. One thing I was happy to find was that the oxygen plus pressure, these termites did not experience, the Tween 80 group did not experience a significant increase in mortality compared to the pressure alone. That was a very big concern of mine, that the oxygen was going to do them in. And then down here, I was also, this is somewhat good news for me, is that this is borderline significant. So those that are defaunated and treated with a 10 to the 5th conidia solution, all of them were dead by day 6, every single one of them, all 30. And these here, this is actually an ongoing experiment, so these guys hopefully are still kicking. Someone's checking on them for me every day. So my faunate, 10 to the 5th, are still alive. This is borderline significant. I'm hoping to increase my sample size and maybe see if that is actually a significant thing. And my final third experiment shifts gears a little bit. So this one has to do with beta-1,3 gluconase activity. Beta-1,3 glucanases are found, beta-1,3 glucanases break down beta-1,3 glucans, which are components of fungal cell walls. Now, it's been found in another species of termite that these molecules are capable of destroying the conidia of Metarhizium. So the question I had was, do my termites have these? And if so, is there a difference between the faunate and the defaunate? So I ran these gels, which show me the presence of active beta-1,3 glucanases. Associated with the head and body, I get these two bands pretty consistently. And then with the faunated gut, I get all of these intermediate bands that are associated with the gut. Now, when I ran my defaunated termites, this was pretty exciting. I get these bands, which are always associated with the head and body tissue. However, within the gut, consistently, every time I do it, I don't get any intermediate bands right here, which of course made me think the protozoa or the bacteria that I'm getting rid of are producing these beta-1,3 glucanases. In order to confirm that, I felt like I needed to culture them separate from the termite. This was quite a fun experiment. I had to get a lot of obscure ingredients, but I was finally successful, and this is what I found. After 12 days of culture, all right, so in a tube, when I ran the gut community, so it was a mixture of them, when I ran them on the gel, I got the same bands that corresponded with the faunated gut. So, in conclusion, I think my preliminary in vitro and in vivo tests support the idea of symbiont-mediated immunity in Z. angusticolis. However, I realize that there are other possibilities that it could explain the patterns in my data, so I'm currently working on some other experiments to eliminate those possibilities. And then I also feel like I have very strong evidence that the protozoa or the bacteria within the gut are producing these beta-1-3 gluconases, and perhaps through some other experiments I can link those beta-1-3 gluconases to the things that I'm seeing in my in vitro study. I like to thank these people who've helped me out and who I couldn't have done this without, and I want to open it up for questions. Yes, in the back. So I've been trying to separate it out, but I realized that, he was asking me, by the way, he was asking if I've tried to culture these independently, the different communities, so trying to isolate them and get them in pure culture. This has been attempted. It's an incredible amount of work. It has been successful with some of the protozoa. One thing I've been trying to do is density separation of some of the protozoa and then run them. I haven't perfected that yet, so I haven't been able to really separate them. But I also realized that is a whole other project to try to pinpoint which particular organisms are producing these gluconases, which might just be outside of the scope of my thesis. Any other questions? Oh, yeah. I haven't tried to. So by the size of the band, you mean like where they're at in the gel? Unfortunately, the gel doesn't give information about size because I can't boil it, denature it, because it'll destroy the proteins. So, yeah. All right, thank you. Great.